Welcome to episode 54 of Frank Reactions, the show where we help you profit from the digital era through better customer experiences online and off. My name is Tema Frank. When I was a kid, my mother always said, we don't ask personal questions. She really drummed into us that it was kind of a rude thing to do. But today's guest, Ernan Roman, says that we absolutely must ask personal questions in order to personalize services and communications with customers at the level that they will find valuable. However, that means you do have to earn the right to ask them personal questions. And one way to start that process is with in-depth interviews to really get at the voice of the customer. So we discuss that in today's interview, along with the dangers of using automation incorrectly simply to irritate your customers faster rather than really understand them and meet their needs. Chat with you briefly at the end of the interview.
Been in the marketing world for 30-odd years, and our focus has evolved to concentrate on understanding customer experience expectations and how to gain those insights in the most effective, powerful, and actionable way. Had the honor of being inducted into the DMA Marketing Hall of Fame a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, what is different about your voice of the customer methodology?
Because these are very complex areas, we've come to realize that an hour-long conversation is what we need, so these are much longer than the industry norms. These are 60-minute telephone interviews.
So if you're doing hour-long calls with customers, that presumably limits the number of calls that a company is typically willing to pay for. How many calls, like how do you determine how many people you need to speak to for you to get something valuable? Like I come from a usability background, and there's this debate that goes on in usability circles about whether you need 5 people or a hell of a lot more in order to get valid information. So how would that translate in your scenario?
Great question. The majority of clients are accustomed to quantitative research, and certainly all our clients have internal research organizations. So our VOC methodology is the goal is to drive a customer experience strategy based on how customers articulate needs and expectations. Hence, that is a qualitative research methodology, because our interest is on why a customer feels that this has been broken or this has not been optimized, and very importantly, how they want the company to change profoundly to fix these significant breakages in expectation. And hence, that's a long, involved conversation. And what we've learned is that something in the range of 100 hours of input is what we need to then get the findings necessary to formulate the strategies. Now, that number can go up based on the number of sales, segments, products, variables, etc. that we may be addressing.
But which explains then why your customers are big companies, because that would get pretty expensive, both to do and to analyze, I would think.
It's not so much the expense. What we find it's the sophistication of the company that gets the need to invest in customer experience improvement, understanding our customers. Also, what comes into play, but it's absolutely a secondary consideration, is technology to execute the level of precision, targeting and personalization, etc., that often comes out of our VOC. But at this point in time, the software, or software as service, or software as cloud solutions that are available are so powerful, are so good, are so inexpensive, that technology considerations are absolutely the minor element.
Yeah.
It's much more, do people get it, and are they truly recognizing how much better they need to do, and truly how dissatisfied customers are, and hence the level of attrition and defection.
And the value to making customers more satisfied, which a lot of them don't seem to get.
You know, that's a huge point that you're making. We are so focused on acquisition and budget and resources, etc. Focuses so much on making the numbers with new sales and generating new revenue, as opposed to what is the mix of retaining customers, deepening customers, cross-selling customers, and what that yields in terms of satisfaction, gross revenue. And those numbers are huge. Do you know when it was first quantified what the differential in cost is of acquiring a customer versus retaining a customer?
Quite a while ago, I would think.
How about almost 100 years ago?
Okay, that doesn't surprise me.
1918, AT&T, at that point called American Telephone and Telegraph, first quantified that it is 5 times more expensive to acquire a customer than it is to retain and cross-sell. To your point, we're still not in the U.S. allocating sufficient resources for retention and deepening.
Yeah, it's funny. I was researching for my book and came across the earliest known recorded customer service complaint was on Babylonian tablets, complaining about the wrong grade of copper having been delivered.
Oh, that's great. That's
I thought that was
wonderful.
Great. Okay, so there is a huge qualitative element. Now, you talked about technology in order to take advantage of it. So part of what you learn through this qualitative research is things that will help companies fine-tune their understanding of different customer segments. Is that correct?
There are certainly expectations that are coming up or differences that are coming up between segments. But I think one of the major consistent points that we're seeing in the research is the surprising level of frustration and dissatisfaction that customers and prospects are feeling with how untargeted, how irrelevant, the term we use, how spray and pray, marketing experiences still are, or customer experiences still are here in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's shocking, given how long people have been talking about doing things differently. And it's just so pervasive. And again, our clients are fortune companies. So therefore, as we talk to their customers and realize the level of dissatisfactions, well, these are some of the most sophisticated companies on the planet, and they're still not doing it at the level that customers want. The other big finding has been that notwithstanding privacy, NSA data collection, hacking, Edward Snowden revelations, B2B and B2C customers are very willing, in spite of that, so at first it seems counterintuitive, to provide trusted brands with deep business, deep personal information in exchange for significantly more personalized communications, experiences, and offers.
And it's interesting, I've just been discussing this a lot online with some colleagues, and I've really noticed, even just in the last few months, this huge upsurge in the spray and pray stuff going on online, and particularly because we now are back to pop-up advertising that's getting in the way of getting where we want to go. And I'm seeing more and more of that, which is intrusive, it's not relevant to what you're looking for at the time, and yet more and more are doing that. So at some level, it must be working, or are they just doing it because they hope it'll work? What's the data?
A great point. So what means it's working?
They're getting a return on their investment, I guess.
We're squeezing some lemon, a few drops of lemon, and therefore, oh, that's great, we're doing great.
Mm-hmm.
How low is the bar set that this obscenely low response rate and yield is deemed acceptable? So A, how opportunistic and insensitive are marketers relative to what is the damage that they're causing?
Right.
What is the impact of every email that is annoying is deleted? What is the impact on the brand, which everybody views as holy and hallowed, but any brand consideration goes out the window as you tarnish the brand and somebody says, damn it, I have received so many emails from the XYZ company that are clearly not relevant. I'm tired of deleting them. I'm going to put them as spam and block them. Well, what did that just do to the brand? People are not thinking about that. They don't care. Why? Spray and pray is fast. It's easy. It's cheap. Well,
spam.
That is a horrible set of factors to justify, strip mining.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
that's what it is, fast, cheap, easy.
Yeah, it's basically taking the approach of spam, traditional spam.
Correct.
Yeah.
Not thinking through the consequence on the brand, on the relationship, and the future receptivity or likelihood to open a you know, a future communication that might have value, but prior ones have just been so off that they're not considered. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this whole point that that has come out of the research is the willingness to share information, that it's so important to get personalized information and experiences that customers or consumers see the value, prize the value of their personal information, and are willing to make a trust statement to say, I'll give you rich information about my business, my person, or my family in exchange for, and what's operative here is in exchange for, mm-hmm. significantly improved communication, office experience, etc. We have seen it across C-level suites, we've seen it across all sectors of B2B, and we've seen it across all socioeconomic levels in terms of consumers.
Sure. So let's talk about why companies are not using personalization more. I mean, you've said that the technology now exists and is not that expensive. So why do you think it is still so rarely used?
We just finished a VOC research effort for luxury brand. And what's fascinating is here is a company that thought that they had nailed personalization. And having spent millions of dollars on the technology platforms and the algorithms and all the metrics, when we were talking about scoping out the VOC research, which focused on how do you engage millennials across what kind of platforms, what are millennials looking for versus different age segments, etc., that was really the purpose of the VOC research. When we said, you know, don't you want us within the 60 minutes to probe how they feel about the personalization or relevance of your communications, your emails, your direct mails, your text notifications, etc., your website, they said, no, let's not burn time on that.
What?
Because we've nailed that. Okay.
Okay.
And so what was shocking was that how often in the course of these interviews, again, we weren't asking questions about personalization because that was not one of the priorities established by our client in our strategy sessions. It was shocking how often, prompted with a huge amount of passion, people were saying, it's a great brand, I love shopping, but I don't open the emails anymore, or I don't go to the website anymore, because they're not sufficiently personalized.
Hmm.
Tell us more about what you mean, what are your expectations, what are your frustrations, and suddenly the dam broke,
mm-hmm.
and people unleashed a torrent of frustration saying, you're not personalizing to my life stage.
Right.
A professional woman. I'm a young professional woman, and therefore, this is the kind of wardrobe or accessories or things that are important to me. Why aren't you getting that? Or I'm a young parent with a young child, and therefore, that means these kinds of items would be important not only to me as a young mom. And how come you're not at that level? And what came out was, you know what? What you're doing is not smart personalization.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel personalized, it doesn't feel relevant, etc. You have not taken the trouble to understand how we define personalization as your customers. So I don't know where you got your algorithms and da-da-da-da-da. It's not delivering what we define as personalization. In a VOC research effort that we did, and this is from the B2B VOC research, one of the learnings that this executive articulated, a customer of this company, was, I know you've invested in personalization technology because I see you trying, as a customer of yours, but you know what? All you've done is to use CRM technology to automate bad behaviors.
That's
and
brilliant.
Then, you know, they went on to say, you're doing all your previous bad stuff, but now you're doing it at scale. With greater volume, with greater da-da-da-da-da. So the bottom line is, I don't know how much your company spent in millions, in tens of millions for this corporate enterprise-wide CRM technology. Look how much money you're spending to do more damage at a greater scale. Was that the end goal you had in mind?
I love it.
Some folks don't get it. They don't care. Insurance is fine because there's so many more fish in the sea, which of course there aren't, and that's a going out of business strategy. Other folks have been so worried looking at the tool or the technology, they forgot to ask, how does the customer define personalization?
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more practically then. So let's say your company, you understand that you need to know more about your customers to deliver personalized information. Yes, customers say in theory, I'm willing to reveal information to get more relevant marketing. But when it comes right down to it, if, let's say, a clothing store where I buy clothes from time to time sends me a questionnaire, I'm not likely to answer that. How do you inspire your customers to actually be willing to share with you the level of detail that you would need to personalize effectively?
That's a terrific question. Number one, we spend often a meaningful portion of our VOC research interviews drilling into exactly that point, which is how do you as a, where are you coming from? What's your perspective? Are you B2B? Are you B2C?
Yeah.
From there, what is your perception or what is your relationship to the brand? What's your level of trust and confidence in sharing information with them?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of information? You know, are you a CIO, a CFO? Are you an HR manager? Where are you as a customer? What's your title and role? What types of information would be important to share to get the desired level of personalization?
Oh, that's a good question, yeah.
What levels of information are important to you, given your role and function? And from there, what questions ought to be asked that would get you what you want?
Mm-hmm.
You know, obtaining personalized data is like dating. On the first date you have with someone, certain things are appropriate to discuss and ask. Other things are not appropriate. And if you do a good job on date one, you get date two, and you can go mm-hmm. deeper and broader in conversation and topics, and that goes well. You get date three, and then you can go appropriately deeper, broader in the topics, questions, etc.
Yeah.
But if you start to do date three conversation and probing and intimacy on date one, you're probably not going to get date three. Marketers are so often so arrogant that they feel entitled to this information and to ask all these things just because someone bought from them. And secondly, marketers who are clueless from a preference data point of view up until now suddenly feel that they have to be asking, you know, 25 or 30 questions on the first date.
Yeah.
And the customer says, hell no, you haven't earned it.
Or even before you're a customer, all these companies that want you to fill in 20 fields on a form before they'll let you download their white paper. Which is ridiculous.
Absolutely. That's another whole category from a prospect point of view.
Yeah.
Everything we're saying about sensitivity and earning the right, et cetera, goes up several notches because, like, there's nothing, I didn't even buy from you, and you want to ask me this?
Then yeah.
A special sensitivity and caution has to be used to earn the right to ask me something since I haven't even inquired, and I might be write a white paper or whatever downloader and, you know, hey, ask enough questions and you're absolutely positive, then I won't bother with it because I have no
yeah.
relationship at all.
Exactly. I got a couple of questions here, one more B2C and one more B2B, but let's start for a minute with the B2C one, which is, let's say you're a company that sells to thousands and thousands and thousands of people. How can you start that conversation with them at a way that makes sense to do that first date? I mean, everybody now, you buy something, the sales clerk gives you the receipt and says, go to our website and fill in a customer service survey. And, you know, who, enough already. I may have done that the first one or two times, but not anymore. So how do you start developing that relationship then when you're dealing with huge numbers of people?
Great question. Key to that is, what is your relationship or your value proposition to the consumers? What is your presumed linkage to that consumer? And in its very essence, if you're doing the right thing, what should be the greatest value you're going to provide to that consumer? What have you learned in research that says this is the net of where people see value in engaging? This is the net of where personalization is defined with all these different components. And so the benefit that you're going to provide once you understand that is, this is the level of personalization I'd like to deliver to you. Absolutely appropriate to how you perceive us in this category as a brand and per your needs. And therefore, may I ask a few questions so I can significantly improve A, B, C, D, and F aspects of your customer experience. It has to be that specific and that targeted, or it's the generic annoyance that mm-hmm. you just referenced.
So there are two points that come out of that in my mind. One is that rather than them saying, I need to go to their website to do something, they should really come to me afterwards, you know, send me an email. Let's say I bought some clothes. Were you happy with them? Did it accomplish what you were hoping? Somehow to phrase it in a way that would make sense there. That may be one thing. The second being that, I think this is a really important point you made, which is you have to explain to them why you're asking for this, why what they get out of sharing that information with you. So,
terrific point you made, and right on target. Number one, the customer or the prospect is at this point doing you a favor. You are not entitled to any of this information. You're right. You haven't earned it. So it's not about blowing them off to the website to go do it,
mm-hmm.
to self-serve, because it's who's it serving? At that point, it's only serving you, the marketer, and you haven't earned it yet. So it's like compounding error upon error. It has to be earned. And you, the marketer, have to do the work. So think about your opportunities. Your scenario, Tema, was a lovely one. I just purchased X in a thank you email.
Yeah.
Why not provide value in terms of thanks? I'd like to get it better going forward. Out of our hundreds of thousands of SKUs, I'd like to understand which we could highlight that would be relevant specifically to you.
Yeah.
And send it to you the way you want it, the timing you want it, the content you want it, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And therefore, here are a few simple questions that we'd like to start with to get it better for you. Secondly, think of all the points of contact that companies have. Those that have physical distribution, well, my God, as companies following the lead of brilliant multi-channel marketers like Sephora are integrating the online experience exquisitely into the store experience or Burberry, how about building the ongoing profiling and preference process as part of the salesperson's interaction with the customer, having it right there updated on the iPad?
Yeah.
The other channel to use is customer service. Almost all major players have customer service operations, and as opposed to viewing them as just manufacturing, call center, talk time driven bucket shops, why not view them as an extension of
your sales force?
The deepening experience and do data profiling there as well.
Absolutely. I just wrote about that, about the craziness that the call center staff are often the worst paid in an organization. And yet,
absolutely,
they're your public face. You know, it's crazy. Okay, well, I've taken a fair bit of your time. Is there anything else that you wish I had asked you and I haven't?
I mean, this is a wonderful conversation, Tema, and I applaud the thoughtfulness of your questions. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
I guess to conclude, I would say this, that the pace of change is so profound now, and the level of dissatisfaction in this day and age, after so many decades of one-to-one and customer-centric and all these platitudes that we've been saying to ourselves in the marketing industry, that we're still so far off the mark in achieving the level of satisfaction and engagement and response and retention that I would urge marketers of all sizes, of all industries, to stop and think about how valuable the customers are, how smart they are, how they, above all, understand or don't understand their products, and that they are the source of the wisdom that will help that company competitively differentiate. And so using any of the research tools that are available, and there's so many, and you know, if all you can afford is a Survey Monkey, great, do a Survey Monkey. If all you can afford is to have your customer service folks track the objections, the non-interested, the non-conversions, great, do that. But engage in listening to your customers humbly, objectively. Don't be defensive as you evaluate that data. And then use that wisdom to completely change how you view the marketing, the engagement, the retention, the relationship. That will be the biggest win you can possibly achieve. And subject to your dollars and your technology, your infrastructure, etc., there are so many tools available. more complex, in-depth ones, use any of them. It's better than not using and staying blind and oblivious to what your customers want, because customers are so smart. We need to be guided by something, and I can't think of anything better to be guided by than the wisdom of our customers.
Excellent.
When I started doing usability testing back in 2001, one of the things that really drove me crazy was so many companies would make you register before you could actually buy from them. Instead, what I told my clients to do was let them place the order, and then at the end, ask them if they'd like you to store their information so that it would make it faster and easier for them if they decided to come back. In other words, show them how they would benefit from giving you their personal information. A lot of companies have learned that lesson, but not all of them. And when it comes to personalizing and getting details on customers, a lot of them really haven't figured it out. What came across to me in today's interview is how crucial personalization is. As we get bombarded with more and more spam and advertising and email, it's overwhelming. And the only really effective way to break through that clutter is if you can truly personalize the messages. And to truly personalize the messages means you need to really understand your customers at an almost individual level. You've got to understand their needs and their desires, and you've got to show them how they can benefit from bringing you into their trusted circle. That's all I've got for today. Before I go, though, I did want to let you know about an upcoming event, particularly if you're based in Western Canada. The Conference Board of Canada is holding its Public Sector Transformation West Conference in Edmonton on Tuesday, December 1st and Wednesday, December 2nd. And the focus is on innovation, disruption, and culture. I'll be there. I would love to see you there. If you're going to be going, I actually may be able to get you a discount. I should be able to confirm that within the next couple of days. Talk to you again soon. If you've got any comments or feedback, please let me know, Tema, T-E-M-A, at frankreactions.com or by telephone, 1-866-544-9262, on Twitter, at Tema Frank, on LinkedIn. It would be super to hear from you. And if you enjoy this podcast, please do tell others about it. Thanks so much. Talk to you next week. Bye.